This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of our live event series. Haymarket Books is a radical, independent publisher dedicated to connecting social movements with the ideas they need in the struggle for a better world. You can help support the Haymarket Project by buying books at haymarketbooks.org and especially by joining the Haymarket Book Club. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and the Haymarket YouTube channel to access all of our upcoming events.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Idris Goodman. This is Another Black Body. This body is mine, but also political when it stands, how it walks with a bop that's centrifugal. This body was once considered three-fifths of a human's. This body birthed by a woman who was birthed by a woman in a city of black alloy. This body fled before the rust settled. This body nomadic, moving through zip codes propelled by static. This body don't do neckties. It wears hoodies, ball caps, t-shirts, sneakers. This body needs freedom. This body stay in headlines. Hunted, some say hated. Some say this body celebrated when adorned with gold and vest and nine-shot ventilated by Smith and West. This body no hunger. This body starved. Yes, this body get stressed. This body knows love, shows love, never held guns, never sold drugs. This body is black. Since birth, African, American, this body got DNA of a slave master. This body got a master's degree. And still this body ignorant, sometimes foolish, full of it. This body push iron and keep trying. This body's a gazelle. This body's a lion. This body is a prayer to never know a cell. Got blood, got heart. This body keep moving. This body's a shark. This body's an ocean. This body swings, grooves, moves, rhythm. Slides, electric. This body don't know how to Dougie. This body get ugly. Don't pop bottles, not bubbly. This body pop and lock. They trying to lock this body to a gurney. This body needs attorneys. It's known rivers searching for the mountaintop. This body trying to know itself. This body survives, endures, makes mistakes. Wasn't no mistake. This body got two hands that clap, salute, give dap. Two hands, black hands sided, become fists, legs that sprint when the rope get ignited. Political, the subject and headline, a force that's centrifugal behind the hashtag. This body is mine to protect, to cherish, mine to deprive. This body is fed well. This body is alive. Welcome, y'all.
This is the APC Juice Goodwin. Yo, what fam, beautiful work, my man. Salutes thank and thank you. Bro. Thank you for setting the tone. Sure. Thank you for kicking it off proper, for real.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. It was an honor to follow those slapping tracks by Mother Nature.
Who you will hear from more this evening. I'm very excited to have Mother Nature perform live in the space. Welcome to everybody. This is Breakbeat Poets Live, Chapter 2. And we have a wonderful lineup tonight, man. Just heavy hitters, man. All yo, through tremendous. The building. We got
this. I just tell you why I'm excited about this, man? Just to get for real. It's like, you know, some folks have been, you know, not doing their events, you know, that they had scheduled, which I completely understand. They're just like, it's too much, too heavy. And but I truly believe the thing I've been saying is like, it's my responsibility to be publicly alive and be publicly vocal. And I know that feels like pretty major, you know what I'm saying? And so it's a courageous thing for everybody to be here together. And I think we're doing something really good for people. I think we're a lot of people really need this. So it feels really exciting that this is happening. And I'm just so excited for who we're going to, that this is happening, man. And like all the voices that are together right now, because there are some brilliant, brilliant minds and hearts on this Zoom call right now. Like it's like folk have no idea what's about to happen to them.
Yeah, no, man. Yeah. You know, folks' minds are going to be blown. And I think their spirit's going to be uplifted tonight. And I think that's what happens in part, man. Like we heal and build in the cipher. And it's part of the reason why I think we, you know, seek these spaces and build these spaces. And certainly I think why we find ourselves in the space tonight, you know.
You know what I like to consider, Kevin Cole?
Yeah.
I like to consider it a bit of saging. For just a little moment in this little bit of cloud space that we have together, we are saging it a little bit and being like, no, we will not be diminished. Like our lights will not be put out. You know what I'm saying? Like the will to live will continue on and we must shine. We must spread some reminder of why life is precious, is a gift. And that we are doing it all. We are not doing it for the gram. We're doing it for the record. Son.
Yeah. Yes, sir. And thank you, man. Thanks for setting the tone with that piece. That piece, of course, is from your latest collection, Can I Kick It?
Oh, this old thing?
Yeah.
Listen, it's not about me right now, man. Listen, I'm just a sacrificial poet. Listen,
it's a beautiful piece. It's a beautiful piece, and it's courageous to admit that you don't know how to Dougie. So thank you for taking that opportunity,
Listen, that's about honesty. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly,
young people like honesty, you know?
That's my era, transparency. That's right. That's right. Well, look, we have an incredible lineup. You're going to hear tonight from just, you know, brilliant people. Franny Choi, Maya Marshall is in the building. John Rio is in the house. Jose Olivares in the building. And then Mother Nature as well, who you've heard from up top. We're gonna see perform live for us tonight. So, Idris, can we hop into to our first reader?
Man, let's get into it, man. Let's get into it. You doing all right, Kevin Cole? I mean, are you doing all right?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I mean, look, you are in Louisville, and I'm in Chicago, and we have people coming from all over the states right now to be in this space, and we have people in the chat who are tuning in from all over the country. I think it was significant last night that all 50 states. Had resistance movements. People were in the streets because, you know, it is far too long for people to recognize that this moment is upon us. But it is also powerful to see so many people activated in this moment. And, you know, something you said the other night, I am motivated by this moment, and I'm motivated by the hope, the desire that people remain engaged 6 days, 6 months, 6 years from now too, because it is a long haul and a long march towards justice, as Dr. King might be paraphrased. And look, the movement, the resistance needs all of us from whatever vantage point we come from to do this work of ending white supremacy and making sure that there is true equity for all people. So salutes to everybody in the building tonight. And I'm excited, man. So I want to introduce our first reader tonight.
Let's get it.
Franny Choi is the author of two poetry collections, Soft Science and Floating Brilliant Gone. She's a Kundiman Fellow, a 2019 Ruth Lilly Dorothy Sargent Rosenberg Fellow, and a graduate of the University of Michigan's Helen Zell Writers Program. She co-hosts the podcast Versus alongside Dinez Smith, and is a Charles Boland Fellow in English at Williams College. On socials, she's Franny Choir on Twitter and Franny Chino on IG, but she could give you those too. Franny, welcome to the Cypher, and thanks for being in the building.
Let's go. Hey, y'all. Oh man, it's such a wild honor and a beautiful thing to get to be here. Another round of applause from home for Mother Nature's amazing set. That was so good. I can't wait to hear more at the end. It's really, really great. I'm so honored to get to read with some real, like, absolute heroes of mine, and people that I'm lucky to count as friends as well. So, my heart is hurting this week, but it feels rejuvenating to get to share this space with you. My heart is hurting for Chicago. My heart is hurting for my hometown, or my movement family in Providence. My heart is hurting for my hometown in Atlanta. For Detroit, has a really special place in my heart too. And I think the one thing that I want to say before I read these two poems is that I really hope that all the Asian American folks who you know, in the last few months have very rightfully been decrying the anti-Asian racism that was spreading as a result of Trump calling it a Chinese virus, et cetera, are, you know, just as vocal, even more vocal with their bodies and their words, fighting the epidemic of racism against our kin, our Black kin. So, yeah. So that's all I'll say. This is a new poem, a new poem that I wrote a few days ago, thinking about my friends and especially thinking about Dinez doing the work that they're doing in Minneapolis. Aaron says the world is upside down. And it's true. The cops are shooting rubber bullets at even the white journalists now. The Target is on fire and the Wells Fargo's shining face kicked in by white boys with gas masks and hammers, some of them actual Nazis. And yet the upside down world is also, by definition, the same world. Like the map that hung in the hallway of the house where I lived three or four lives ago. Argentina at the top, Greenland kissing its toes. It was a metaphor, someone explained, for seeing things another way. So yes, if it is true that another killer cops killed another Black life, another unauthorized chokehold, another no charge, again, once more riot gear again, budget, once again, gas station flames more, who's to blame gets blamed again. If again and again it is the same, then it holds that the opposite must also be true. The so-called opposite world, the world of food drop-off stations, of phone trees, of bailouts and carry an extra mask, the world of kneeling for a stranger's gift of milk to flush the tear gas, the world of saying a thing in unison, so clear it drills a hole through to the other side of what's possible, so clear and wholly inverted, we realize it's been here all along. O kingdom of fire, O kingdom of food, with the same mouth we take your blessings. With the same mouth, we pronounce you come. And this one is called Field Trip to the Museum of Human History. It's a poem that I wrote a few years ago when I was doing work that was being called abolitionist work. And I was having a lot of trouble understanding what a world without cops would even look like. Part of my process of getting there was to write this poem. It takes place in a future long after the abolition of cops. May we be on our way. Field trip to the Museum of Human History. Everyone had been talking about the new exhibit, recently unearthed artifacts from a time no living hands now remember. What 12-year-old doesn't love a good scary story? Doesn't thrill at rumors of her own darkness whispering from the canyon? We shuffled in the dim light and gaped at the secrets reborn in clay, buried in clay, reborn as warning signs. A nightstick, so called for its use in extinguishing the lights in one's eyes. A machine used for scanning fingerprints like cattle ears, grain shipments. We shuddered, shoved our fingers in our pockets, acted tough, pretended not to listen as the guide said, ancient American society was built on competition and maintained through domination and control. In place of our modern-day accountability practices, the institution known as police kept order using intimidation, punishment, and force. We pressed our noses to the glass, strained to try to imagine strangers running into our homes, pointing guns in our faces because we'd hoarded too much of the wrong kind of property. Jadira asked something about redistribution, and the guide spoke of safes, evidence rooms, more profit. Marianne asked about raiding the rich, and the guide said, in America, there were no greater protections from police than wealth and whiteness. Finally, Zaki asked what we were all wondering, but what if you didn't want to? And the walls snickered and said, steal, padlock, strip search, hard stop. Dry mouthed, we came upon a contraption of chain and bolt, an ancient torture instrument the guide called handcuffs. We stared at the diagrams and almost felt the cold metal licking our wrists. almost tasted dirt, almost heard the siren and the slammed door, the cold-blooded click of the cocked back pistol, and our palms were slick with some old recognition, as if in some forgotten dream we had lived this way, in submission, in fear, assuming positions of power were earned or at least carved in steel, that they couldn't be torn down like musty curtains, an old house cleared of its dust and obsolete artifacts. We threw open the doors to the museum, shedding its nightmares on the marble steps, and bounded into the sun, toward the school buses, or toward home, or the forests, or the fields, or wherever our good legs could roam. Thank you all so much. Thank you.
Stay safe. Hey, Franny Choi, y'all. Franny Choi, yo, Franny, thank you so much for those fire poems.
Yeah, do enough work.
Yeah.
I love what were we going to say?
Play? No, go ahead, man. Yeah, I was going to say, go ahead.
I was just going to note, you know, like big shout out the you know, the soft rhyme scheme there in the middle too. Like I see with the bars.
Oh, Franny has so many bars, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing that I love, you know, I always check for the artists that I love because they, you know, not only is their work speak for itself, but their work in the community speaks volumes about who they are and what they do. Yeah. And I really admire so much of the work that Franny does and has been doing. And that last poem particularly, I think, kind of speaks to so much of what this space is about and why I rock with artists, because, you know, certainly this world has been imagined. And so it's also on us to unfurl our radical imagination into the space to think about a world that is without police, a world that is without white supremacy, a world that is without capitalism, and all of these things that keep people separated from one another. And so I really admire everybody in the building tonight, and that poem in particular by Franny. Thank you.
This is why the poets need a seat at the table, because, you know, when people ask these questions of, you know, well, who's going to, you know, these automatic questions whenever you come up with an idea that seems radical to some, well how are you going to whatever? And the poet's job is to say, well, here's what it could look like. Right. Like that's what we do. And we articulate it in a way. We, using craft, we build the answer and the possibility and the reality. So, you know, this is not just, you know, our feelings. This is also our architecture. You feel right. me? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. This is our plan. This is our urban plan, right? This is,
come on now. Come on now.
Yeah.
You know, your whole thing is opened up.
Like, hey, listen, I feel like, you know, it's funny because we asked people to read two poems, and now I'm like, I want Franny to like dip back in and just like kick another 16.
Let's just keep going.
Let's pass out. Let's bring in our next reader.
Yes,
I want to introduce Maya Marshall, who is a writer and editor, co-founder of Underbelly, the journal on the practical magic of poetic revision. Marshall has earned fellowships from McDowell, Vermont Studio Center, Callaloo, The Watering Hole, and Caveh Kanem. She's the author of Secondhand and former senior editor of Pank. Her writing appears in Best New Poets 2019, Muzzle Magazine, Rhino, Blackbird, The Volta, and elsewhere. She lives in Chicago, you already know what it is, where she works as manuscript editor for Haymarket Books. Her debut poetry collection, All the Blood Involved in Love, is forthcoming on Haymarket Books and the Breakbeat Poets. And I have to say, Maya is my week to week, my go-to in this work of putting Breakbeat Books out on Haymarket, and is such a fine editor. And as you're about to see, a bar writer, Maya Marshall, welcome to the Cypher.
Hello, friends. Hello, fellow poets. Thank you for having me. Thanks for being in this bright spot in this dark week. Vivi Francis says the poets are the vanguard. People wonder what it is we do. We do the imagining and the documenting and the archiving of what is already beautiful without adding frills. So I'm going to read two poems. I'm going to say that there are not women and GNC people directly mentioned in these poems, but those are the people on my heart right now. And that includes Breonna Taylor and Sandra Bland and Ayanna Jones and Toni McDade. Lavender Menace was a group of lesbians who showed up at like a National Women's March and was like, fuck y'all are leaving us out for no reason. Those people did not include the brown women, so I'm going to take that term and apply it to the brown queers too. Lavender Menace adopts a black boy, and Summer Black Boy Burns, say black boy takes shelter. Imagine summer camp. Black boy afloat in Link, Michigan. Black boy pinata. Black boys dance. Death drop. Black boy could be a first cousin once removed. Black boy would be 10 now, or 12. Black boy looks like a father he's never seen. Black boy is a grandma's boy. He is amalgam. Black boy is dragonfly. Brilliant, iridescent, conspicuous in flight. 24,000 omatidia. Black boy is anther and filament. Black boy is a tiger. Tiger. Black boy is steel. At 17K, black boy is waiting, is chicken chest. Black boy is grandfather clock tall. Black boy has never been a clock tower. Black boy is egret wings, is flying, is his father's arms. Black boy is lisp and puppy scented. Black boy is whipping boy. Black boy is Billy Goat's gruff. Black boy's first home is ragdoll, is a closet corner. Is tender purple. Black boy is a plum pit, a walnut hull. Black boy is Kurupira. Black boy is a dark city, is an open window, is a roving squad car, is crashing glass and song. A single black boy is the softest avocado in the market. A black boy is confetti. See his locked hair fairy. See his smile shatter light. See him shake in his new bathroom. See him wash his hands and brush his teeth. See the little boy explode into laughter. All right, so I don't think that there are maybe enough, thank you, friends, monuments to black love. So here's this one I wrote in response to a photo in a series in an exhibit called Southbound, came out last year in South Carolina. The lovers in the photograph. The men nestle, one inched into the cleft of his love's thighs. They wait under the eye of the sun in the bullseye of the camera's lens as a white witness documents black love on a late spring day in Chesapeake, Virginia in the year 2000 and something. One, eyes closed, lips resting against his fellow's cheekbone. The other, eyes open, stares forward, soft-browed, as if he's just opened his eyes. Two moles make a base clef of the curve of his left eye, or a colon. Open exposure in this one frame. Loose clothes betray a slim collarbone, a meaty bicep, two modest black bellies, sun-coppered and hairy, the slightest catch in a fold, a clasp on an elbow. The lovers caught, lean into each other, away from the leaves, well in front of the building, holding their spot on the black top of the complex's parking lot, locked as if in bronze. I've never seen a monument like this. Do-rag and chin-strap mustache, brawn armed bear with a fresh, tight fade. I've lived at the corner of Confederate and Lincoln, spat on the stone feet of a gynecological barbarian, seen equestrians erected high above men's heads, but never yet two sleek, wide noses, a one man's neck tilted in supplication, mouth slit open to let the air dart in, hands wound lightly around a waist and lower back. Knuckles alit on a broad, dockered thigh, two men spun like blossoming vines, shining in the splendor of two like soldiers in love. In light, not in shadow. But here, the woman's eye has arrested our fellows in dewy day, without labored sweat or defiant glances, not off guard or posed, but seeming free and seeming safe in the baleen of each other's embrace. Thanks,
Lovies. Yo.
Yo.
My Marshall fan.
You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying? It's going down. We only two poets in. We only two poets in. It's already a thing. What was it? The black boy is the softest avocado.
Yo, can I tell
stop.
You?
Stop.
Come on.
Just, come on, yo.
Just stop out the gate. Me. I love how she comes in the room with the club banger too, you know?
A little heads up would have been nice. Like you trying to, you know what I mean?
All you're saying.
Trying to do to me. What you trying to do to me?
I'm so excited for her book because that's a little taste of
what light is. You're saying that's like a moose.
It's like for her. She was just, you know, she's just like, it's Wednesday. Let me offer these. You know what I mean? But that is going to be all, you know, all the blood involved in love is a beautiful, essential, important collection. I'm excited to have it.
When's that drop, man?
Yo, I don't know. I mean, next year, I hope 21, Maya, 22, maybe. Fall 21. Yeah. Fall
21. I'm doing the Dr. Dre detox. I see what it is.
No. It's definitely not going to be that.
Hey, when it's definitely finished. Not going to be that.
That's why he gets so much Botox, is because he can't keep a straight face when people ask him about the record. It's too soon. My bad, y'all. Listen, I'll leave. It's been a good night. I've enjoyed myself thus far.
Listen, poems do they rattle all, they scramble.
You know what I mean? All your good sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It breaks you down.
Yeah.
Breaks you down. You know, you resort to puns and dad jokes and things. Let's go. Who next,
man? All right. Yo, we'll keep it moving. It does not stop. It really does not stop. We next to Flex. John Murillo is the author of the poetry collections Up Jump the Boogie, finalist for both the Kate Tuss Discovery Award and the Penn Open Book Award, and Contemporary American Poetry. His honors include many: two Larry Neal Writers Awards, a Pushcart Prize, the J. Howard and Barbara M.J. Wood Prize from the Poetry Foundation, and fellowships from the NEA, the Breadloaf Writers Conference, Fine Arts Work Center of Provincetown, Cabot Condon Foundation, the Wisconsin Institute for Creative Writing. Recent poems have appeared or are forthcoming in such publications as American Poetry Review, Poetry and Best American Poetry, 2017, 19, and 20. John Murillo is an assistant professor of English at Wesleyan University and also teaches in a low residency MFA program at Sierra Nevada University. He lives in Brooklyn. And when I didn't know we were going to be able to get him. And I've not spoke to John. John used to live in Chicago, but when I reached out, he was like, "Yo, I'm down," because that's how that's how this community gets it in. John Murillo, welcome to the Cypher, man, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. You guys can hear me okay? All right, cool. No, seriously, man, this is one of those things that I didn't know that I needed, but I needed this. I needed to be here to hear your words, to just share your energy and be part of this community in general, but tonight of all nights. Yeah. So thank you. I'm going to break the rules just a little bit. No, we're reading two poems a piece. I'm actually going to read just one of my own, but I wanted to open with two short poems from Lucille Clifton, if I could. I just felt like it was necessary to bring her voice into the room. Yeah. So the first one is a really short poem. It's only 5 lines long. It's called "Why Some People Be Mad at Me Sometimes." They ask me to remember, but they want me to remember their memories. And I keep on remembering mine. And this next one is written in the voice of James Byrd. If you remember, he was the man who was lynched and dragged to death behind a pickup truck in Jasper, Texas, in 1998. And I wanted to dedicate the reading of this poem to George Floyd and all the other recent victims of state violence. Yeah. Jasper, Texas, 1998, for Jay Bird. I am a man's head hunched in the road. I was chosen to speak by the members of my body. The arm, as it pulled away, pointed toward me. The hand opened once and was gone. Why and why and why should I call a white man brother? Who is the human in this place? The thing that is dragged or the dragger? What does my daughter say? The sun is a blister overhead. If I were alive, I could not bear it. The townsfolk sing, "We shall overcome," while hope bleeds slowly from my mouth into the dirt that covers us all. I am done with this dust. I am done. That's Lucille Clifton. Idris mentioned a few words that resonated with me earlier, the preciousness of life, honesty and transparency. One of the things that I try to do in my writing in general, but in particular in this book that just came out, is I'm looking at notions of masculinity that we've all, to some degree or another, have adopted. Yeah. Most of them toxic, all of them problematic. And so one of the things that I try to write about is how I and people of my generation have really participated in violence. You know, we're decrying state violence, but also there are many ways in which we personally have participated over the years. This poem is called On Confessionalism. Not sleepwalking, but waking still with my hand on a gun and the gun in a mouth and the mouth on the face of a man on his knees. Autumn of 89, and I'm standing in a Section 8 apartment parking lot, pistol cocked, and staring down at this man, then up into the mug of an old woman staring, watering the single sad flower to the left of her stoop, the flower also staring. My engine idling behind me, a slow moaning bassline and the bark of a dead rapper nudging me on, all to say someone's brokenhearted. And this man with the gun in his mouth, this man who, like me, is really little more than a boy, may or may not have something to do with it. May or may not have said a thing or two, betrayed a secret, say, that walked my love away. And why not say it? She adored me. And I, her, more than anyone, anything in life up to then, and then still for two decades after, and therefore went for broke. Blacked out and woke, having gutted my piggy and pawned all my gold to buy what a homeboy said was a Beretta. Blacked out and woke, my hand on a gun, the gun in a mouth, a man who was really a boy on his knees. And because I loved the girl, I actually paused before I pulled the trigger. Once, twice, three times. Then panicked, not just because the gun jammed, but because what if it hadn't? Because who did I almost become there that afternoon in a Section 8 apartment parking lot, pistol cocked with the sad flower staring? Because I knew the girl I loved, no matter how this all played out, would never have me back. Day of damaged ammo or grime that clogged the chamber. Day of faulty rods or springs come loose in my fist. Day nobody died. So why not hallelujah, say amen or thank you? My mother sang for years of God, babes, and fools. My father, lymph node masses fading from his x-rays, said surviving one thing means another comes and kills you. He's dead, and so I trust him. Dead, and so I'd wonder years about the work I left undone. Boy on his knees, a man now, risen, and likely plodding his long way back to me. Fuck it. I tucked my tool like the movie gangsters do and jumped back in my bucket. Cold enough day to make a young man weep. Afternoon when everything or nothing changed forever. The dead rapper grunted, the bass line faded, my spirits whispered something from the trees. I left, then lost the pistol in a storm drain, somewhere between that life and this. Left the pistol in a storm drain, but never got around to wiping away the prints. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, John Murillo, man.
So I just, there's many things. I have two things I want to say. First thing I want to say, and this is for everyone listening out in the digital sphere, is that what you witness is a rarely used rule, which is we saw John Murillo invoke the Lucille Clifton rule, which is that if you are limited to a number of poems, you can get around that because, of course, you can read as many Lucille Clifton poems because there's food, there's oxygen, and there's Lucille Clifton poems. So very, very smart move by John Murillo up top. Second, I want to say that what I just heard just now was something, it was basically a blues, what we're going to call a blues opera. That was a very tragic blues poem that I just could not see on stage with music playing. So shout out John Murillo.
Yeah, man. And that's in the new joint, which I just got, you know, I just got in the mail, Contemporary American Poetry. So all these folks have books and platforms and spaces to support. So please make sure you do. And salute, John. Thank you, man. Thanks for being in the cipher. Idris, how you doing, man? We're already changed.
I was a different guy like 10 minutes ago, like 15 minutes ago.
Yes. Have you learned how to Dougie since?
No.
I didn't know if that was the change you were referencing.
No, I still do not know. No. I am changed in ways that I will not even be able to understand, but I will be happy to explain at the next Breakbeat Pulse Cafe event.
Okay. Well, good. Yeah. Keep it tuned for chapter three then.
The world don't. Let's go.
All right. I'm good, right? Man. This is spectacular. I mean, these events so far have been, you know, they're dreams. They're really like some of my favorite writers on the planet in one space. And, you know, I mean, typically, right, we wouldn't be able to be together in this way. And so, you know, because of the situation, because of the conditions, we're able to gather in this way and commune and build and hear one another. And I just think that there's something also very special that we get to see into each other's homes too, you know, or wherever we're at now. You know, I mean, everyone has, you know, their own setup behind them. But it's nice. So you know, Mother Nature has like the built-in gallery.
much like some people play like fantasy football, this is like your fantasy poetry night. That's happening right now where you're like, yo, I want John Murillo, but I want John Murillo to invoke the Lucille Clifton rule.
Oh, that's all him. But yes, but these are like, you know, the dream team is assembled. Yeah.
Oh, the dream team is here. Oh yes, they're here. The dream team is here.
There you go. Should we keep it pushing?
I mean, Is there more?
I can't believe it.
Be more bars. I don't know. It's like downtown Nashville on a Friday night. Could there possibly be more bars?
Wow. Indeed there is. Jose Olivares is a writer from Chicago and Calumet City, Illinois. He is the author of Citizen Illegal and the editor, along with Willie Perdomo and Felicia Rose Chavez, of the brand new fourth volume of the Breakbeat Poets anthology series, Latinx. Jose is residing in BK, but as you can see, stays repping Chicago on his heart and his mind every day. Jose, welcome to the Cypher fam.
Thank you for having me. What's up, everybody? My name is Jose Guadalupe Olivares. I just want to say that I'm really glad to be here with Maya and Franny and John Murillo and Idris and Kevin and Mother Nature. I'm going to read this poem. This is a new poem. This poem is called "It's Only Day Whatever of the Quarantine, and I'm Already Daydreaming of Robbing Rich People." It's in a few different parts. One, I would like to punch Jeff Bezos in his stupid face, and I would like healthcare in case my hand bruises, and I would like to live long enough to hug my friends, to kiss my mom and dad on their foreheads, and not worry about infecting them. I would like to live long enough to punch Jeff Bezos in his stupid face again. Is it stupid? Stupid or not, I would like to punch it. Two, what does that solve? You could ask. This isn't a good poem, you could say. And you're right, it's not a good poem. I don't have health care. I don't have health care. I don't have health care. There's no way to make that pretty. Three, but let me try. When sirens brush by our block, I see cardinals and blue jays brawling. Their feathers tickle our buildings. All I hope is the ambulance leaves before my magic trick unfeathers itself and the sirens become sirens become sirens. Three, if we stole $1 billion from Jeff Bezos, he wouldn't even notice, so let's steal more. Four, when sirens brush by our block, I don't see birds. I see bills, bills and coffins. And when I see coffins, I see all the debt that can't be buried with me. How even in death, my name will be a worm in an accountant's spreadsheet. So that's the first one. Then, you know, I want to quickly say, so Nate Marshall, who's in the YouTube chat, I saw, and Tarfia Fazula and Franny Choi, who's here with us, a team of us are writing poems, individualized, personalized poems for anyone who donates money to Bell Funds. All you have to do is send a photo of your receipt to poemsforthefree@gmail.com, and someone will send you a poem. So if you if you've already made a donation, if this inspires you to make a donation, let's make a donation so we can bail out some people until we abolish these prisons and abolish these police and can use that money for other things. This poem is called Mexican Heaven. One, all of the Mexicans sneak into heaven. St. Peter has their name on the list, but none of the Mexicans have trusted a list since Ronald Reagan was president. Two, St. Peter is a Mexican named Pedro, but he's not a saint. Pedro waits at the gate with a shot of tequila to welcome all the Mexicans to heaven, but he gets drunk and forgets about the list. All the Mexicans walk into heaven, even our no good cousins who only go to church for baptisms and funerals. Three, it turns out God is one of those religious Mexicans who doesn't drink or smoke weed. So all the Mexicans in heaven party in the basement while God reads the Bible and thumbs a rosary. God threatens to kick all the Mexicans out of heaven, si no paran con las pendejadas. So the Mexicans drink more discreetly. They smoke outside where God won't smell the weed. God pretends the Mexicans are reformed. Hallelujah. This cycle repeats once a month. Amen. Four, Jesus has a tattoo of La Virgen de Guadalupe covering his back. It turns out he's your cousin Jesus from the block. It turns out he gets reincarnated every day and no one on earth cares all that much. Five, all the Mexican women refuse to cook or clean or raise the kids or pay bills or make the bed or drive you to work or do anything except watch their novelas. So heaven is gross. The rats are fat as roosters, and the men die of starvation. 6, there are white people in heaven too. They build condos across the street and ask the Mexicans to speak English. I'm just kidding. There are no white people in heaven. 7, tamales, tacos, tostadas, tortas, pozole, sopes, huaraches, menudo, horchata, jamaica, limonada, agua. 8, St. Peter lets Mexicans into heaven, but only to work in the kitchens. A Mexican dishwasher polishes the crystal, smells the meals, and hears the music. They dream of another heaven, one they might be allowed in if only they work hard enough. Thanks, y'all.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
yes, sir. Jose. Thank you, Jose.
I'm with it.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
That poem, that the Mexican Heaven poem, is from the book Citizen Illegal, also out on Haymarket Books. Is it not, Kevin Cole?
It is. Those are facts. Also, the new joint is fire. Just I love when people bring that raw. And yeah, man, thank you for that. Yo, there's also Idris. We should shout out, man. There are a whole lot of superstars in the chat. You know, Nate Marshall's in the chat.
Oh, yeah. Eric Who's
Foreman's
in the chat?
Comic Akbar is in the chat.
Erica Foreman.
Yeah,
oh, Tarfia
Faizul, Faizula is in the chat. We just got a lot of superstars.
Let me ask you a question though. Is Sharkula in the chat?
You know, he has not commented, but I'm sure I will say this. He is very close. Wherever he's at right now, I know he's close.
He's outside your house right now.
If any one of us were to step outside right now, we could probably get come up off of like some Sharkula vinyl or CD, guaranteed.
Kevin Cole, let me ask you a question. One of the things that I've noticed tonight that what I love about these events is it just reminds me of certain techniques, like certain things, I don't know how to say it, but like, I just love this style of poetry, this lane of poetry. I love breakbeat poetry. There are little subtle things that we do. They're very subtle. And I'm sure like somewhere, some academic poetry person say, well, no, in 1305, Byron did, you know, whatever. But we freak it. They don't freak it like we do. But I love, and I'm a simple guy. I like simple things. But I love the sneak rhyme. I love just the little sneaky rhyme, a little internal rhyme, a little like wink rhyme, I call it.
Yeah.
When Jose just had the saint and gate, little slant rhyme between, like, I think it was like the third poem and the fourth poem, whatever. But everyone tonight, at some point, I feel like has had a sneaky rhyme in there. And so shout out all your sneaky rhymes. I'm catching them.
I love that that's the technical term too. So
that's little, the wink rhyme.
We on it.
Do you have a favorite technique of the breakbeat poets, Kevin Cole?
Yeah, well, I mean, to your point, I love that everyone who spit tonight is very conscientious of sound, and as Angel Nafis talks about, not putting the audience to sleep. You know what I mean? I think that's you know, it's these are moving narratives, and it's also masterfully written and it's masterfully orated. And I think that there is no, you know, distinction is that, you know, if it rocks on the page, it's going to rock in the ear. And I like that people take such care about how the shit sounds as well as, as what it means, as well as how, as well as how it's crafted.
So what you're saying is that you appreciate the flavor in your ear.
Hello. Okay. All right.
We got to move on, folks.
Yeah, we really...
We should move on.
Idris, if I may, you know, before I introduce Mother Nature, I was going to, make a contribution to the site this evening.
Oh, you going to spit some bars?
Let's
go.
Like this moment is every moment. And I think that's one of the things that Idris, you know, we've talked about recently on, Idris and I do this is a little shout out, but we do a conversation on Vocalo on Monday nights called Same Old New School. And we kind of talk about hip hop and everything that in some ways is being discussed tonight too. But that how hip hop is really kind of suited us for this moment. In some ways, hip hop is politicized now maybe four or five generations of young people to be aware and engaged. And, you know, this moment is every moment. And so this morning, as I was thinking about maybe what to contribute, I thought of something that I wrote a little while ago and have been tinkering with since. So this is called Upon Hearing Jason Van Dyke Is Home on Bail. There is no conspiracy. It is plain as day. If a black cop shot a white teen 16 times, the world would be upside down. There would be grand wizards and grand jury investigations, charges and changes at the highest, whitest levels. Who mourns black people other than black people? Jason Van Dyke is home, getting his dick sucked, having a hot meal, sitting in a worn leather chair, working a model train in the basement of his bungalow. He left his cell to a system of paths from the fat, crooked hands supposed to hold him accountable. Whiteness's greatest privilege is to walk free in a bed of blood, to murder and lie again and have it on video again and act like it never happened. We go crazy yelling at the TV to change the channel. Laquan McDonald will never change his clothes or have a firm night's sleep. His family will never have a firm to hold the city culpable. The culprit's free to put croutons on a salad and kill right before our eyes. There can never be enough justice here, not in a land wrongly named. We have known that and know that again. This is only the latest of the sick, chronic examples the city country beams. Nothing changes. White cops walk freely while the ghosts of black men huddle around a TV, a courtroom, a newspaper, knowing justice is just a myth, something white people say to sleep firmly at night, tucked into white cotton sheets. Yeah, thank you. No, thanks for letting me get down. Yeah, man. Well, you know, it's just this moment is new, and it feels, you know, too familiar. And
yeah, you know, right, exactly. You
know, yeah,
yeah. It is, and isn't there also like a bit of a, each time this happens, you know, this is what I've been struggling with. There's a cynical part of me that's just like, here we go again, right? But then there's this other part of me that's like, maybe it's a little further. You know, maybe we push the ball a little bit further. And I will say this. You know, I got very hip to it with, you know, when LA burned, right? You know, that was the first time I was like, but wait a minute. I thought this happened when my parents were kids, right? Like, to see it in color. Cause before, you know, the Bull Connor videos, those were black and white. I was like, that was grandma's era. That was mom. And then LA happened. And I was like, wait, it was so surreal. I was like, what is going on? This doesn't happen anymore. Right. And since then, I've been tracking like every riot since then. And each time I feel like, well, this one's a little bit different. Right. And what you said up top about the swiftness with which I think the level of connectedness I feel to all the other cities and states that are doing this, like, I feel like we're having one conversation, and that feels different to me. That feels a little bit different to me. And again, I don't get too optimistic, you know what I'm saying? But I just want to share that for anyone else who might be thinking the same thing, is that I think it's also important to honor that spirit of, like, you know, we're not to utopia, we're not to Wakanda yet, but we've inched it further. You know, we've inched it a little bit further, and someone is going to build on what we're doing now. So,
yeah. No, what, man, it's worth. And I think it's worth saying that tonight the funds raised go to Black Lives Matter Chicago, which is, you know, one of those spaces and one of those organizing bodies and communities that I am optimistic because of the, you know, essential work that they do to bring communities together, to build bridges between communities. And I think that organizers now have new tools to organize, new tools to communicate and stay kind of ahead of the curve. And I think to hold both those things, man, to be, you know, cynical because, you know, and have lived in history and to be aware of history, but also to remain, you know, optimistic that we are building the future that we want to envision and want to live into. I think that's the attitude that we have to have, that it is a long haul, but we can get there. you know? And so, and I feel fortified by this community, man. And so salutes to everyone in the building tonight. Salutes to Jose, salutes to John, salutes to Maya and Franny, the Haymarket squad. And
thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.